Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For the listeners of Book Geeks Uncompromised podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. And book reviews is exactly what we do on this show, but I wanted to recommend a book that we actually haven't talked much about on the show before, and that is Flex, the first book in the Mancer series by Ferret Steinmetz. This is one of my favorite books. I read it several years ago before we started the show, before we started the blog, and when I was actually looking to make sure that it was on Audible before I recommended this, which it is, the entire trilogy is actually on there that you can get for your free book. So it's not just the first book, you can get the entire trilogy. And the Mancer trilogy is a urban fantasy series that people that have an extreme obsession with something, that obsession becomes their superpower. So one of the main side characters, her obsession is video games. And so there's a portal gun used, there's a Mortal Kombat scene. It's just awesome. It is an incredible world, an incredible concept, and I absolutely recommend it. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc. That's audibletrial.com/bookgeeksunc for your free audiobook. Going to that specific one lets them know who sent you. So thank you very much to Audible for sponsoring the show. We have one last sponsor, and then we will get into this week's news and reviews.
With over 100 episodes and 50,000 downloads, the Grim Tidings podcast has featured some of the biggest names in publishing. Past guests including Joe Abercrombie, Ellen Datlow, R. Scott Baker, Raymond E. Feist, Delilah S. Dawson, and many more. Are you a reader looking to discover cool new books and hear interviews with your favorite authors? Are you a writer looking to expand your knowledge on the craft and business of writing? Or do you just happen to enjoy fun, entertaining, informative, and sometimes slightly ridiculous podcasts? Clearly, the Grim Tidings podcast is the podcast for you. Voted one of the top fantasy podcasts by Reddit's r/fantasy, it's your podcast for all things grimdark and more. The Grim Tidings podcast. Never miss a new episode. Subscribe on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or Google Play. To find out more or for a complete episode archive, just log on to thegrimtidingspodcast.com.
Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised.
The entire series.
I don't know what it was about this book. I loved it so much.
How do I know more about it than you do? And it's your number
I'm
one book.
I'm bad with names, okay?
Spoilers, gosh.
Everyone buckle in. Welcome to Book Geeks Uncompromised. This is Greg here with Danny to talk about what we read this week, as well as what is going on in the science fiction and fantasy community. This week, we read Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card, and we are lucky enough to be joined by our friend David from Casually Lit Show for that review.
Yes, he Woo-hoo. Will join us when we get to that review.
Yeah.
And we forgot to mention when we had him on, he mentioned that he's opening up his own brewery in Pantego, Texas.
Right, we talked a little bit with him, I know.
Yeah, that opens on February 24th.
Right.
So if you are in the DFW area and like going to breweries, definitely check him out. They are almost ready to open. Yeah. We've seen tons of pictures about it, and it looks really nice.
The place looks awesome. They've been putting a lot of hard work into it. I think at one point he says they'd been working on opening it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a love child they've been ready to give to the rest of us. So we're looking forward to that.
Yes.
But he was so much fun to talk to, and I can't wait to get to that.
Well, how was your week, Greg?
Books.
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 You actually read more than one this week.
I actually did. I didn't get to get into Ender's Game as much, but it's a book I've read in the past, as well as we watched the movie again, which did play into our review. Other than that, we did read a little bit of our next week's, which will be Red Rising.
Yes.
We're tackling that series, which is interesting. That's, again, I want to talk about it, but that's for next week.
Yeah, so. we'll leave that alone. We're going to talk about that next week. It's one that I've been meaning to get to, and with the new book, Iron Gold, coming out. which is, I think it's supposed to be like the start of a sequel series, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've been seeing it a lot, so I definitely wanted to read that.
Been looking forward to, or you've been looking forward to it. Like most of the books, you just tell me about it.
Great, so. We're reading that.
Yeah. Hey, it works for me. I just show up and you go, hey, read this. And I go, ooh, I like it. That's generally how it's been going. It works.
I mean, yeah, if it works, don't break it.
And, you know, about 90% of the time I get a good book out of it, so.
Yeah. Right? Who are you to complain?
Right, exactly. I just show up and talk. That's all I do.
Okay, so I guess we'll move on into news.
You're which they're really about your book reading week.
Well, that's basically what I read. Was those?
You didn't have 5 books. I read. I read more than one, so it should mult because like you always read more than me. It should have like multiplied to like 20 or something.
I did read The Picture of Dorian Gray.
Well, there you
by
go.
Oscar Wilde.
You were talking about that, right?
I did, and because of that, I actually started watching Penny Dreadful,
okay.
The BBC series. I was not expecting what I got.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's. I love it. Like, I'm on, like, episode 3, mm-hmm. and it's a lot more sexually explicit than I anticipated, which is not a bad thing. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I just wish I'd have known ahead of time so I didn't have my 3-year-old sitting next to me.
Went, oh, okay, close your eyes.
That's exactly what it was. I covered his face. Yeah, and it's very, very violent. It's a mashup of, like, 1800s horror stories. It's got Frankenstein and kind of vampires, maybe. We'll see. And Dorian Gray is in it.
Mm.
And like I said, I'm only on episode 3, so I'm sure there's a ton more that's in it.
Yeah.
I was telling Jordan about it, and he's like, okay, so it's once upon a time for horror stories. Like, that's actually a fair description.
Yeah, the only thing I know Dorian Gray was a popular fictional character. The only thing I knew him from was the terrible movie League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Yeah.
I knew him from that, and I was like, from that, I liked it, the idea of him in the painting, but I never knew his full backstory, so.
Yeah, I was buddy reading it with a friend of mine, Melanie, mm-hmm. and the only thing she knew him from was Penny Dreadful. So it was interesting discussing, oh, well, I didn't expect this because in Penny Dreadful. I didn't expect this because in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Very cool.
Yes. So now news.
There you go.
Now news.
We get into the news.
Which, two things. The TV show Firefly is going to be expanded with a series of original books.
Yep. I was excited to find this, and Danny went, I already got that.
Yeah, so. I got that.
She shut it down.
The first book is due this fall, in fall of 2018. Joss Whedon is serving as a consulting editor. So
the story should at least be good.
Yeah, I think the stories will be good. I don't recognize any of the authors that are going to be in it.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, it's Firefly.
It's Firefly.
All I have to do is stay somewhat faithful to the characters, and I'm there.
Yeah, yeah.
So the three stories, we've got Firefly, Big Damn Hero by Nancy Holder. That's the one that's coming out in October this year.
Yeah.
The story is Captain Malcolm Reynolds finds himself in a dangerous situation after being kidnapped by a bunch of embittered veteran browncoats.
Hmm.
Then the second one, which comes out in March next year, 2019, is The Magnificent Nine by James Lovegrove. Jane receives a distress call from his ex, Temperance McCloud, that leads the Serenity crew to danger on a desert moon.
Ooh.
And then Generations by Tim LeBon. I'm probably butchering his name, so I apologize if you're listening to this. That comes out next October in 2019. The discovery of the location of one of the legendary Ark ships that brought humans from Earth to the Verse promises staggering salvage potential, but at what cost? River Tam thinks she might know.
And I wonder, I'm assuming then this is going to be before Serenity, but like in between?
Maybe. I couldn't find anything on that, but yeah, nothing in here references Wash or Book
or
anything that happens in Serenity, but it could still take place afterwards.
So yeah, it'd be fine either way. I'd love just to hear more stories about them. The only thing, I mean, like you said, Whedon's going to be a part of it, so that's a positive at least. The story should be fine. I'm just worried about these maybe they are well-known authors and I just don't know them. I'm worried that maybe their writing style won't be up to snuff, so it'll be like, I like the story, but I don't like how it's written.
I mean, with Whedon serving as a consulting editor, and I don't know, he might have had some power over who chose it.
Maybe.
So that, you know.
I'm sure he did.
I mean, I'm sure the author's various styles went into play in choosing authors to extend the offer to.
Well, that's probably in the same. I'm supposing it's going to be in the same style as the Fable video games head books.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like small little books, you know, they were chapter books, but still pretty small. And it's in the same way, written by different authors, but still kind of had the same style idea to them. But I don't know.
Okay.
We'll see. I'm interested. I'm definitely interested.
The final story, and I'm not sure about this one for a reason that I'll get into. Right. The author Cassandra Clare is going to launch a one-off publishing house for a collaborative anthology set within her Shadowhunter world. The authors that she's collaborating with include Maureen Johnson, Robin Wasserman, Sarah Reese Brennan, and Kelly Link.
Hmm.
I've heard of some of those authors, but I haven't read any of their work. Bustle.com, which is where I was reading a lot of this about, says the Shadow Market Enterprises, which is the name of the publishing house that Claire is launching for this release. It will digitally release the stories on a monthly basis for $2.99 a pop, beginning in April 2018. A print edition from Simon & Schuster with two additional stories will hit shelves in 2019.
Hmm.
Cassandra Clare said it represents a sense of fun and freedom that we don't always have. It's given us a lot of joy. They wanted to push back against the common publishing belief that someone else's benefit is your loss. So I guess if this author is doing big, then that's your loss because you're not doing as big. I don't know. I feel like that's kind of a crazy thing because so many readers read multiple books. Like, I don't know if it should be that competitive to gain readers because so many readers read a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
And she said, if you want to do something that's connected to your work or it's weird or different, it's difficult to pitch. We wanted to recapture that fun, that enjoyment, which kudos to them. You know, they wanted to write this, so they went in together to do it because they didn't feel like they could pitch it or were unable to successfully pitch it to their publisher. That's totally cool.
Yeah.
You know, you have a great time.
Yeah.
The thing that kind of made me scratch my head a little was the actual title of the article.
Mm-hmm. Was
that it's going to shake up publishing.
Mm.
And I don't know that that's the case. I mean, if it helps publishers, I guess, take more risks.
Maybe.
In deciding which books to select, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know that it's going to shake anything up because several authors, like, go to different publishers to publish something because Mark Lawrence is coming out with his sci-fi series that he's teaming up with Amazon's imprint or something.
Yeah.
And I think he's doing it because I forget what publisher he's with for his other books, but he mentioned in an interview recently that he's going with Amazon because his fantasy books are already sold to this other publisher and this one's sci-fi, so he can go to a different one.
See, I wasn't sure how that worked with authors. If it was once they publish with a publisher, if they all their books have to go through that publisher. I know a lot of times they'll make deals and saying, okay, you know, we're gonna pay you for a trilogy and you have to make a trilogy of these books or, you know, five books. I didn't know if you had a brand new idea, a brand new series, if you had to bring it to that publisher first or if you could just go to another publisher.
I think it might depend on your individual contract.
There may be individual contracts. I'm sure there's some publishers that have any brand new book ideas you have to introduce to us first, at least. So, yeah, I always wondered about that. I've never really had confirmation on what exactly how that works.
I mean, it's cool. Cassandra Clare's fans, I mean, that's cool. They'll have something else to read of hers, along with, you know, collaborative authors. That's great.
Yeah.
I just wonder if it's maybe being a little oversold in the article as far as the impact that it might have.
Yeah, it probably won't.
I mean, she's a big author, so I mean, I guess it could impact it in some small way, maybe. I don't know.
Apologize. I was yawning. Yeah, I could definitely see that. I can definitely see that it. I don't think it'll change very much either. It'll be a new novel way to do it, but. No, I don't think it'll be like a, oh my gosh, the industry's got to change.
Have you ever read any of her stuff? She wrote the Shadowhunters.
Shadowhunter? No, I don't.
Like City of Bones?
Oh no, I did see like the first 5 minutes of the movie and then my little sister was too scared and we had to leave. So
was there a movie? I think so. Oh yeah, there was a movie. There's a TV series.
There's a TV series as well. That's right. Yeah.
So
I don't know much about it. I know a little bit. It's a little bit. It's YA, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I read some of it a while back, and I just couldn't get into it. But I know it's insanely popular.
Yeah.
I'm not insanely popular, but very popular.
Very popular. I've heard of it.
Okay.
That's about it. That's all I got.
That is about it. There just wasn't a whole lot of news. Yeah.
There's always so much news. There's always.
Yeah, but some weeks are more exciting than others. You know what there was not this week?
No Harry Potter news.
No Harry Potter news.
I feel bad. I feel wrong.
I did see some article that said a Harry Potter cruise is coming, and I'm like, I'm not even.
You can take a book with you on the Harry Potter cruise. That made it book related. I tied it in.
Good work.
Book related. That's what we do here.
Yes.
Book related. You got to have the hyphen.
Yeah.
Make sure.
Books or book related. Like, whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
Right. Just whatever you're feeling.
All right. Well, it's time to get into our review / discussion of Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card.
Woohoo.
And we have with us today a very special guest, our friend David from the Casually Lit podcast, which is not a podcast. It's a show, correct? Right.
That is correct. Hey, everybody.
And he likes beer, so I know that much.
Yes, I'm a fan.
So much so that you're opening your own brewery, correct?
That I am. New Main Brewing Company in Pantego, Texas. Pantego is a little town inside of Arlington, so we're right smack dab in the middle of DFW.
Very cool, very cool. Well, that's, we know you're on Casually Lit. Y'all talk a little bit about everything. Is there anything particular to talk about? Because I've listened to y'all a couple times, but Jordan and Goat are the ones that listen to you the most.
Right. Yeah, we mainly focus on things in the craft beer world. Our main premise for the show is we open with just a little bit of news, personal stuff, what we, have seen or, something, some funny anecdote or whatnot. And then over the course of the hour, we go through about 5 or 6 or 10 beers. We keep it around 5, but we all crack them and share them, talk about what we like, what we don't like, compare. If it was a special edition that came out this year as opposed to one that came out previously, we'll talk about how it's changed over time. And I'm pretty much the color commentary on the show about beer. Since I've been home brewing for about 5 years, we decided to open the brewery 2 years ago. We're very, very close to actually opening the actual brewery, so I've got a little bit more insight into actual beer industry type stuff. But then Jason's the host of the show. He's very much the type of person that we're trying to reach with the show. Is someone who's had a couple craft beers before but maybe wants to know a little bit more. And then Rhody is kind of the other color commentary on the show. He's very much in the same vein. He's tried a lot of craft beers. His job takes him out of state, so he gets to go find a whole bunch of craft beer that we don't necessarily see on our shelves.
Oh, nice.
And so we get to try stuff from like Oklahoma, Louisiana, some stuff from Colorado. So we're all just basically beer geeks.
Before we started this tonight, I asked Jordan if he had any messages for you, and he said hashtag Team Rhody.
Oh, see, I listened to the last episode of Controllers and Keyboards, and I beg to differ. His allegiance is kind of swaying a little bit there.
He changes every day.
Well, I'm sure at this point our listeners are wondering why we brought a beer expert on for our review of Ender's Game. So just to tie that in a little bit, Jordan and Goat are good friends with everybody at Casually Lit, so they came on to our gaming podcast, Controllers and Keyboards, to talk about the new South Park game last year. And while you guys were over, we were admiring my bookshelves, right. And Ender's Game was on there. So it came up in the course of conversation that if we ever did a review of Ender's Game that you had to be here. So here you are.
I knew immediately upon seeing that on your shelf that we were kindred spirits.
I've been looking forward to this. Danny's the one who introduces me to all of my favorite books. Has always been her, and Ender's Game is one of them that she just kind of went, read this. And I went, okay, sure. And came back going, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I know, right? I first saw Ender's Game, the novel. I have two older brothers that are twins. I think one of them was reading them in his English class, and reading the first book for school. And I saw the cover, and I saw this little spaceship flying in a really interesting sci-fi. All of the cover art is done by one artist, and I should have looked up his name or her name. But they all have a very distinct style of just 1950s sci-fi, but very much more modern concepts of what sci-fi looks like.
Yeah.
So it has kind of a 1950s, like you would see it in a retro-themed diner painting. I love that. And so I was really turned on. I was like, oh, man, that looks like a really cool, book about spaceships and whatnot. And he's like, you probably shouldn't read it. It's about kids killing people.
Yeah,
maybe I'll give that a few years.
Nah.
I really don't remember what made me... Oh, I remember I was changing jobs, so for a while at school, I went and did highway construction project management, which basically means they give you a pickup and you go watch concrete get poured. Hmm. It is boring as hell. So I needed something to kind of kill some time. And also, I had read somewhere that it was on, I think it's on either the Navy SEALs or the Army's book list. And it talks about, you know, the aspects to which it appeals to them is things like, you know, learning how to command, how to lead,
right,
to take matters into your own hands. And definitely a lot of those themes come through the book. So I thought, you know what, I'm about to change careers. I want to jump more into design engineering, something that actually uses what I learned in school. And I need to be a leader. I need to be, you know, in control of my faculties. I need to be the best that I can be. And so like, I kind of talked myself into, well, I should really read, you know, one of these things on this book list. I had no idea that I was going to fall down the deepest rabbit hole.
There are so many books in this universe.
Yeah.
There are, and I've read almost every single one.
I have not.
I've only done Ender's Game. I've only done the first one so far.
Yeah, I've read most of the Ender Quartet. I think I gave up on Child of the Mind because that one, for some reason, just bored me to tears. The end of the Ender's Quartet.
Man, that one gets real thinky, as I like to say. You gotta concentrating on what you're reading.
Yeah, maybe I just was not in the right headspace for it when I read it. But I did read the Parallel series, the Ender's Shadow series, and that one's really good. Yeah. I first read Ender's Game when I was working at a library. It might have been the first science fiction that I actually read. Like, I'd seen, like, TV shows and movies, but I don't know that I'd ever experienced science fiction through novel form. But I was working at the library, and I think I was just shelving books, and I happened to overhear some just library patrons just talking about it, and somebody saying, oh, well, if you've never really gotten into science fiction, you should totally start with this one. So when it came back, I grabbed it.
Excellent.
Yeah, like I said, it was something you introduced to me. And now that I think about it, I can't think of any other really sci-fi books before that ever grabbed me that was like, oh, I really enjoy this. I've always been mostly YA when I was in, you know, high school and younger, and now mostly into high fantasy. It's one of the few sci-fi books I truly, truly like and care about.
I don't know. I guess the only other sci-fi I would read was YA. I mean, it was like Hunger Games and Scorch and all that.
True.
All that stuff and sort of Maze Runner and all that. But I was mainly reading that because my wife was reading it. we either read together or we do the audiobooks while we're on road trips and everything like that. But you know, I was really into literary. Like classics and stuff in high school, like obviously the stuff that we had to read, but I really enjoyed taking something apart and going through each chapter and finding the symbolism and finding the motifs and seeing how it carries across different characters and seeing the plot turns. I really enjoyed just granularizing, you know, a book and what the author meant and everything.
Oh, yeah.
That really appealed to me. And then I turned around and went to school for engineering.
not to get us totally off topic, but I'm actually reading The Picture of Dorian Gray right now by Oscar Wilde, and it's really good. And I am very much picking apart, like you're saying, like every single thing that is said. It's really, really layered.
Oh, a purple curtain. That must mean something deep to the author. No, it's a purple curtain, dude. Calm down.
Probably not in this one. No. It probably means something.
Now I know for listeners out there who don't know Ender's Game, what's kind of a general synopsis that could be given about it?
You know, I was just looking at my copy.
We usually
and
read,
I
yeah.
have a special edition one that actually does not have a dust jacket or a synopsis on it.
Yeah, we have. Yeah, we usually read the dust cover or whatever little synopsis is for it. Right. So,
and I was hoping you guys had that because I've only ever read it on my phone.
Oh no! Well, I can pull it up on Goodreads real fast.
Yeah,
let's see.
We can do that.
I can speed up to Goodreads. See how fast I can be.
She has instant access to Goodreads.
It does pull up when I type in GOO. It pulls up before Google. So.
Nice.
Okay. Ender's Game is a 1985 military science fiction novel by American author Orson Scott Card. Set in Earth's future, the novel presents an imperiled mankind after two conflicts with the Buggers, an insectoid alien species. In preparation for an anticipated third invasion, children, including the novel's protagonist, Ender Wiggin, are trained from a very young age through increasingly difficult games, including some in zero gravity, where Ender's tactical genius is revealed.
Now, we watched the movie the other night. I don't remember them calling them the buggers in
they
the
do.
Movie.
Oh, did they? Do. Yeah. Okay. I think the technical name is Formix, but their slang name is buggers.
Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, that's because the Formix is what I thought they called them. I don't remember them saying buggers, but I'm sure they did.
I mean, the buggers is like, it's the slang. It's like, you know, in Cold War, you're like, oh, you got to watch out for the Riskies, you know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
When they don't really describe the buggers until later in the book, but when they do, they describe it as sort of if ants had become the dominant species
right.
and evolved to be a more actual civilization than just digging in dirt.
Right, right, right.
So, yeah, it's kind of a near future. I don't think it ever gives, like, a specific year.
Date, yeah.
Yeah,
it stays away from that, but it's really interesting the way they build geopolitical interests.
Yes.
So they, you know, for all we know, it's probably, I don't know, maybe 50 to 100 years out. It's very near mm-hmm. future, but a lot of the technological advances that come about, I think, they either get from the first or second invasion. They actually kind of reverse engineer some of the bugger ships and technology and stuff like that. I know just some backstory as to where technologically from reading some of the other books, they are out in the asteroid belt mining, like commercially.
Okay.
I could tell you how near or how far away from modern day we are.
If I had to guess, I'd say it's somewhere in the 22nd century because they mention at one point, I think, that it's been 70 years since the second invasion.
Hmm.
Right.
Okay. So I'd say somewhere in the 22nd century.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. And I was definitely thinking while watching the movie, and I remember when reading the book, some of the technology actually isn't that far off from what we have now.
Yeah, like they mentioned the desks, which are basically laptops.
Yeah, there's those. Like they're kind of tablet-type things. And also like in Ender's home, they're watching TV on a window.
Yeah.
I could easily see that being a thing coming soon.
A flat-screen TV.
Yeah, it's just a flat-screen TV put into a window.
Yeah.
it's crazy. The technology from, you know, that Orson Scott Welles thought of in 85, it's something that we're almost pretty close to having.
You know, you mentioned the geopolitical stuff going on. Like, for one thing, there's population control has started.
Right.
So families can only have two children. If they have more than that, the third child has no rights, correct?
Like, right. Yeah. The first chapter sets this entire series, entire world up for you. It's titled Third. And that's the label. That's like, you know, that would be the equivalent of calling someone a bastard for them, for all intents and purposes. You're calling someone like, oh, the fact that you exist is an abomination to the society now.
Mm.
Yeah, and Ender himself is sort of, I don't know, in a gray area because he is a third, but the government specifically sanctioned his birth.
Right, but you can't exactly go around telling people like,
yeah,
well, you're a third. No, it's okay. The government said I could be.
Yeah, exactly.
I got a paper. I got identification. I'm good.
Yeah. And they sanctioned him because, like the synopsis said, they're training their young people to fight off the buggers for their anticipated third invasion. And then Peter, his oldest brother, was born, and he's incredibly smart, but he's just too violent.
Yep.
He's exactly what they were looking for, but just a little bit too violent. So their
brutal.
Second, yeah.
Brutal, yeah.
Their second child, Valentine, she's also ridiculously intelligent, but she's too compassionate.
Yep.
So they were afraid she wouldn't be able to do what needed to be done.
Yeah.
So they sanctioned Ender. And, you know, what I didn't realize until this reread was I always read it as he's a balance between the two, or he's supposed to be like a just right mix of both.
Mm-hmm.
But reading it, I realized that he is fully both very compassionate and violent.
Yeah.
Definitely. He has the capacity to basically become each of those people. But, I mean, it's kind of interesting because when you were saying, you know, to balance one or two out, I always get the image of Goldilocks. And there's a lot of animal imagery throughout the entire book. And so it's kind of interesting later on when he's playing a game, his figure is a bear.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm.
I draw those. That probably has absolutely nothing to do with
digging too deep, whatever.
And I always think too, because, you know, these are all extremely gifted children, but they are children. He's six when he's taken to go to battle school.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's, I think, maybe one or two years ahead of time normally for other really gifted, smart children. But these are all kids playing these games with, you know, logistics and mathematics and astronomy and physics and then, of course, warfare. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting. All of the armies, we'll get to, I'm sure we're going to get to battle school very soon, but all of these armies are named after all of these animals that a normal child would be learning what sound they make at that point.
Right.
Like, kill.
Yeah, and none of these children in this book, ranging from 6 to what I think Ender's 12 at the end of the book, none of them at any point sound or act like children.
No.
And I think that's kind of one big criticism that the book gets from many readers. But it doesn't bother me, one, because it's at least semi-addressed in the book. And again, reading through it this time, I don't know why this didn't hit me earlier. I think it actually hit me while we were watching the movie. I wonder if that's meant to be a statement on, you know, the way we're sending these very small children into war to kill and to be killed. Is that meant to be commentary on how we actually send people to war and those are somebody's children?
Wow, yeah, that's interesting. That's a really interesting take on that.
I don't know. It kind of hit me while we were watching the movie. Like, yeah. It hadn't really dawned on me before, so maybe I'm just reaching a little too far, but
it fits.
No, yeah, that definitely fits, because you're exactly right. A lot of times, you know, some of these kids, they go off and they're in actual combat, and then they come back, you know, PTSD or damage, you know, mentally or physically, and they're not old enough to buy a beer.
Yeah. Yeah, and there was a lot of, like, mental illnesses that come about by everything that Ender goes through.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we can go into talking about battle school. That kind of puts us into there. So go ahead. You tell us. What is battle school?
Battle school is a big old school up in the sky.
And there's battles.
No, it's basically it's a school that's actually in orbit around Earth. They practice in they live in gravity because it's a giant wheel, so it's artificial gravity, like a typical system for most sci-fi books and movies.
Mm-hmm.
But at the center of the wheel, they have what's called the battle room, and it is a zero-G, basically giant arena that they all, you know, you have two teams battling each other in mock battles where they learn strategy in three dimensions, and, you know, outside of the battle room, you have warfare history, you have mathematics, you have science and physics, and everything that's necessary to learn how to think in three dimensions and how to win, you know, how to gain victory in battle.
Yeah, and one thing I love with battle school, and it kind of ties into, you know, everything that Ender's going through, is I love that he's got to learn the difference between, you know, violence and being a leader and having to be violent at times, or when to be compassionate and having that back and forth. And that's a big struggle he goes through in battle school. It's, you know, it's a big part of that while he's there, trying to figure out his place and figure out when he needs to push and when he doesn't. And, and Harrison Ford runs the whole thing. You know, I love that.
Yeah. That's the actual character, is Harrison Ford.
Yes. Yep.
His name is not Colonel Graf. It's not Harrison Ford.
It's Harrison Ford.
I thought that was an excellent casting. Oh, that's probably 100%. My favorite thing about the movie is he's an excellent Colonel Graf.
Yes.
Oh yeah. 100%.
Yeah. So I think with battle school, we see kind of multiple sides of Ender. We see both his tactical genius with the way he sees things differently within the battle room in zero G, and he's able to orient himself differently and think about it differently so that, I mean, he teaches other people to do it the same way so that he just is able to just totally kick ass in there. And at the same time, we also see how he's kind of learning to be a leader also at the same time with these other kids that are bigger than him because he's the youngest to ever come to battle school.
Right. And it kind of a really important theme that goes throughout the entire book is what someone does in isolation. So,
yes.
I mean, yes, he's in a battle school with, you know, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 other people, children and adults. The psychological things and just the societal things that both the teachers and the students do to single him out, he doesn't have anything resembling what a friend would be. at school. He doesn't have his best friend he goes and eats with every day. He doesn't have, you know, he's not even like a good teacher's pet. None of the teachers are really all that attached to him. And the ones that he thinks are his friends end up turning around and saying, nope, fend for yourself, kid. So, this book is a really interesting thought experiment as to what would a really super high intelligence person do if they had no one to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, from the beginning, Graf singles him out in front of all the launchies, all the, you know, the brand new kids. He singles them out in front of everyone on purpose. Right. So that he gets that elevated status of all the other kids are like, oh, he thinks he's special. You know.
Yeah, they purposefully isolate him to push him to be better.
Right.
So that he cannot rely on anyone.
Exactly. It's part of their plan to mold the tool that is this boy. And, you know, that's also a really interesting thing is there are a couple conversations between Graf and Ender and then later with another character in Ender that talk about, you know, at great times of tumult and you know, a turning point in human history, humans are called upon, single individuals are called upon to change the course of history. And at that point, you have to be a finely tuned tool. You have to, whether you like it or not, humanity rests on your shoulders and you better have your head in the game.
Right.
Because it's just, if it's me after I've had a couple beers and it's just, and the world is relying on me, that's not great.
Yeah.
Oh, crap.
Yeah. So it's really interesting. You know, you tend to put yourself in the protagonist's shoes in most of these situations. And all these situations that he's going through, he's thinking to himself, like, well, surely if something were really dangerous, the teachers would step in. Mm-hmm. Well, surely if I'm going into this situation, they're looking for some kind of output, you know, some kind of outcome that benefits everyone. And there are several situations where that is not the case. They're like, you know what? You're smart. You figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, purposely putting him in situations so he can learn to adapt and overcome, and they force him into it. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and with that, I mean, it obviously messes him up psychologically a lot. So it brings in to question a little bit, like, what is morally acceptable when you're talking about the potential extinction of the human race? Like, where's the line?
Right.
And according to Graf, there really isn't one.
Nope.
I mean, it's kind of a moot point because, you know, yeah, you're screwing this kid up. But if you didn't do that and we failed, then there's no one really going to disagree with you because we're all going to be dead. But if we do win, then, I mean, you're welcome.
I may have stepped on a few people along the way, but you're welcome.
Sorry, Ender, but you're welcome, other 4 billion people.
Yeah.
Or however many are on Earth now. I don't even know. Population control, it might be a little bit different. A little bit less.
Yeah, a little bit less.
That was definitely a really interesting thing. And part of the tools that Orson Scott Card uses to exhibit just how brilliant these children are, it's kind of a really convenient thing for a writer because you always want to spend more time in your characters' heads. Well, these are all the things that these people, these children are thinking and deducing and, okay, well, he can't mean this. This is what I've got to do. Like, they're doing all of this within the space of a normal conversation. So that's kind of an interesting take on, you know, totally being in a character, but also having them make all these well thought out, well rationalized, very, very succinct decisions given lots and lots of input. So I thought that was just kind of an interesting point, interesting way that the author gets across the point that these children, they're just extremely intelligent and they're way better at talking words than you and I.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, with all the incorrect words that I've used while just trying to get recording today.
Well, and that's I can say Ender, while his situation and what he's going through is, like, it's not that he's not a relatable character, but he definitely see things in a different light than I do. And that's not a negative thing. He's just different. And for me, he's not as relatable, but I think that's the point.
He's just compassionate enough to be relatable.
Yeah.
But then he's also intelligent enough to be not really aloof, but apart from even the reader.
Yeah, not a negative towards him at all, just more of, like I said, I think that was the point of his character, was supposed to be that, because he's on that line of super intelligent tactical decisions versus being compassionate and trying to go this way to save as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting situation to put a main character, or well, just the protagonist to know that the survival of your species depends on your success. Yeah. And then be put through all these trials. A lot of times in a chosen one scenario, like, yeah, you know, the person always kind of feels like, okay, well, I bet I could make a difference, or I've got this family history and I've got to live up to my legacy and things like that. You know, there's always this kind of doubt, like, well, you know, I don't know if I'm good enough, darn. No, this kid's good enough. He knows it. He knows that he has to be in top shape. And so that plays into a lot of the things, you know, we were talking about before, whether or not he knew if the teachers would step in when things got out of hand. The fact that they didn't, he's like, okay, obviously I am totally on my own. They don't give a darn about me.
It's okay. And, you can cuss. We don't mind.
It's funny, okay, though. You cut out right as you were about to say it.
Yeah, I've got a bleeper on my end.
Nice.
We don't use that a lot on our podcast.
Yeah.
We don't either.
Controls and keyboards doesn't either. We have Charlie, so it would just be one long beep the whole time.
Yeah, it sound like R2-D2 over there.
Yeah. One thing, I know Orson Scott Card himself has a reputation for being homophobic and just kind of generally a bad person in that regard.
Or is he still alive?
I'm pretty sure.
I believe he's alive, yes.
Oh,
okay. And I know a lot of people criticize the book just based on that, but we are trying to separate the author from the book. We're judging it on its own merits. But in that vein, the one thing that I did notice a little bit was just the slightest bit of sexism.
Really?
Because there's only one girl in the battle school, and that's Petra. Mm-hmm. And it is commented on, like, I didn't even really think anything of it, mm-hmm. but it is commented on, there are not many girls admitted because there are too many years of evolution working against them.
Yeah, that was pretty hard to read. That was kind of chauvinist, like, wow. I mean, we're in the future here. Maybe there's some, you know, level playing ground.
Yeah. Right. Well, especially in Zero G, like how much actual physical strength it comes into play. You know?
Well, that's true. But I mean, I've seen some strong women.
Right.
Oh, sorry. I think it's less of the strength side of things. And I think it's more of the mental capacity of war is what they're saying.
Right.
Not that I agree with that. I'm saying, I think that's what it is. The mental capacity for battle and war.
Right.
Women versus men. I think is what it was.
And there's...
I know so many more intelligent women than I know intelligent.
Oh, 100%. There's so many women I know that are so much more intelligent than I am. I know it.
But there is one female student at battle school, Petra Arcanian, and she is just as intelligent, if not more so, than most of the boys in the battle school.
Right.
And she goes on to play a very big role after Ender's Game on Earth.
Right. And can I say just, I feel like the conversation's moving in this direction. I absolutely hate the portrayal of that character in the movie.
Really?
Yeah. Oh,
why?
They destroyed a beautifully complex character. Hmm. Her and Bean. Those are two of my favorite. After reading the Ender's Shadow series and just totally being in that world, those two characters have so much more than just, they were also there when Ender was fighting.
Yeah. Okay. So I did want to go on to a movie versus book comparison. So other than that, I just wanted to say that Bean is my absolute favorite character. I adore him so much. Mm-hmm. So did anybody else have any other comments before we move on to book to movie adaptation comparison?
We were talking about Ender earlier and kind of tiptoeing around how he wasn't all that relatable. Honestly, my most relatable character and probably my favorite character of Ender's Game, just the first book, is Valentine.
Okay.
I associate with that so much more. She's very brilliant in everything. She's very compassionate, very empathic. But or empathetic is how you say that.
Mm-hmm.
Words are hard. but there's this whole subplot that doesn't make it into the movies, which is what Valentine and Peter, Ender's elder brother, do on Earth while he's up in battle school. It's a very important thing that happens, and it ties into the ending of the book. But just the way that she goes about that, I relate with her so hard. Because it's, you know, she understands that she might be being manipulated, but she's also really curious. Mm-hmm. And she's got just enough handle on it to maybe handle it herself. And right. I don't know how and why I relate to that so hard.
Hmm. All right.
Okay. Any favorite character or most relatable character for you, Greg?
Oh, I don't know. I liked them all. I liked them all pretty equally. I liked Bonzo getting beat up. That was always fun. Bonzo losing in the battle was always fun.
So Bonzo is your least favorite character.
He is certainly my least favorite.
Okay. Okay, so I guess then we'll go to a book to movie adaptation. And as we all know, the book is always better.
Always.
But the question is, does the movie hold up at all? I think, like you already touched on it with Petra and Bean, they totally glossed over so many things in the movie that I felt like a lot of the almost friendships that Ender does have were really forced in the movie.
Yeah. They definitely were. And, you know, his friendship with Eli was one of the first and most important one. And he's barely in there.
Yes. He's almost replaced with Bean.
Right. And, I guess because it's a movie, you know, and because they have runtime, you know, constraints, they kind of do mashups with a lot of characters and events and timeline things. And I understand that. But I think the biggest problem I have with the movie is they made it too much of a young adult movie and not enough of a sci-fi movie.
Yeah, well, and I know one thing with the movie is they had Harrison Ford. They had to get him in as many scenes as they could. And so there were a lot of extra scenes and stuff that weren't in the book.
What I hated with that, too, was Harrison Ford's a fantastic casting choice for it. But I felt like they missed so much of Colonel Graf's character because there's so much of him in the book where you can tell that he feels awful about what he's doing for Ender. And he cares about Ender, but he's doing what he's doing anyway for the good of humanity. And they completely just took out Colonel Graf's affection for Ender in the movie, I felt like.
They did. And it's, you know, it's kind of hard for Harrison Ford to to come across that in that way. I mean, there haven't been a whole lot of movies I can think back to where he was just totally, you know, affectionate and very in touch with his feelings about what he's doing.
I mean, and Colonel Graf was not a, oh, give me a hug, Ender kind of character, but he did have that connection with him.
I don't know. Have reservations about pretty much everything he does.
I don't know what you're talking about. Harrison Ford was very nice on that movie Air Force One when he snapped the guy's neck, kicking him off the plane. I mean, come on.
My plane.
No, they spent so much time in the battle room, too, in the movie that I still felt like it was wasted time. Like, I didn't feel like I knew Ender's genius truly from what they did do in the battle room.
Yeah. Right. He was portrayed very well, I think, by Asa Butterfield. Yes. I think that was a really good casting call. Honestly, it's hard to portray a child of that intellect without him just coming across as a child, because you're staring a child in the face the whole time. When you're reading a character, you can put any kind of face, any kind of personification on a kid or on a character, and a lot of the decisions he makes are very mature, very you know, very serious grown-up decisions, and you just I find myself forgetting that he's a kid until he talks about, you know, not being able to reach the top ladder rung or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I ranted about this a little bit earlier when we were texting, but it's such a small thing for me to get hung up on, but like I said, Bean is my favorite character, and they mashed him with Eli's character a little bit. But then they also changed the origin of the nickname Bean, because it was because he's not only about the same age Ender was, I think, when he came to battle school. So he is very smart, but he's also a lot smaller physically than even kids his age should be. So he's as small as a bean. And then when Ender first meets him, he makes a comment about, oh, did you get that name for size or for brains? And they just totally glossed over it. And it was, oh, I'm from the streets, so I'm not worth a bean. Like, just stop. Right.
That does foreshadow his own origin story. However, the way that Ender establishes that with get that, you know, for brains or for size, that's a whole dynamic that's completely missing from the movie.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah.
For me, this movie, it's no The Last Airbender, which pissed me off to no end. But I still really enjoy it. I still have a lot of fun watching it. Like we've said, Harrison Ford, Asa did a fantastic job as Ender. I can't say enough, and I'm not going to spoil anything, because if you have not read this book, you need to, especially for the ending, because it has one of my favorite endings to a series or to a book ever. And yes. I loved getting to see it on the screen, and I can't say more because I'll spoil it and I'll fanboy all over the place. But and I did love the movie's portrayal of the ending. Overall, it's a movie I really enjoyed. I definitely agree with all the points y'all have made. They are correct. I can't dispute any of them. I really enjoy the movie.
Yeah,
it is still a fun movie, and once you realize that it's a, you know. I kind of treat it as like this is my homage that I'm paying to this great book. Mm-hmm. It's this movie with this budget, these characters, these actors. Once I realize that it's not going to be anything like the Ender's Game that I've built in my mind, mm-hmm. I'm able to sit back and be like, okay, well, that's an interesting take on that. And I really wish they would have put the other person in, but I understand why they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a visually stunning movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Visually it is. And had I not read the book, I think I would enjoy the movie more.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Definitely.
That's kind of how it was with Percy Jackson for me. I saw the first Percy Jackson movie first, mm-hmm. and I enjoyed it when I first time I watched it. Then I read the books and I went, "Holy crap, that movie's trash." So, it's comparatively to other book adaptations out there, it's certainly not the worst. It is
definitely not. No.
Yeah,
it's not the worst, but it's just frustrating enough.
Yeah,
I just find myself wanting to leave the room
or fall asleep during
it. Or fall asleep as I did.
I've done that too. I always build it up in my mind. Like after I finished reading, I was like, "Oh, I gotta watch that movie. Gotta watch the movie." And then I'll watch it, and I'll get like halfway, maybe three quarters of the way through. And it will just lose me, and I don't understand it because I've always understand, I always appreciate it. I just like, man, they're not doing that. They're not doing that.
And that's something I've learned not to do, which is whenever they announce that, hey, this favorite book you love, they're making a movie of it, I don't go immediately read the book.
Yeah.
Or I don't read it until I've seen the movie, and then so I can go into the movie, with very little expectations, and I can just go enjoy the movie. Mm-hmm. Then I'll go read the book, and I'll hate the movie, but,
Well, the movie's the gateway. Yeah. The gateway to the book. It's the gateway book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, right. I guess that's it.
Nothing else to say?
Nothing else to say. I am out. I am out of notes.
Out of notes. Me too, to 100%.
Yeah, I know.
I can talk about Ender's Game all day, every day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you are the only two people on the planet I've met that will actually listen.
Really? It's such a well-known book. I'm actually surprised.
Yeah, my wife has read it once or twice, and she enjoyed it, but I don't know what it is that draws me to it. I read this book 4 times a year. I love this book. If I actually had a physical copy of it, it would be a pile of dust.
I think the first time I read it, the thing that I enjoyed most about it was Ender's genius, because I just like seeing just these absolutely brilliant commanders that make these amazing tactical decisions in the middle of battle. I think that's one of the reasons that I like the Codex Alerus series by Jim Butcher so much.
Oh, I was just about to say, I recommended Furies of Calderon to somebody, and now I really, really want to read it.
Yeah, and I think...
I said, I am writing that down.
Furies of Calderon. Google it.
Yeah, the first book, not so much, but I think the third and the fourth books are my favorite in that series. And it is a fantasy series, not science fiction. I know you enjoy science fiction more than the fantasy, but...
Obviously, I'm also a big Lord of the Rings fan.
There you go.
That's like saying you like Bud Light. That would be the equivalent of someone's like, yeah, I like beer. Bud Light's great.
See, he brought it back to beer somehow.
Everything's beer to me.
Yeah. Really is. Okay. All right. I think that's it for us.
So I think next week, we'll go ahead and wrap everything up. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Red Rising trilogy.
Oh, I'm having so much fun reading that.
Yeah, we're still in the first book right now, but we're reading the full trilogy for a review. So if you would like to contact us, have anything else to add about Ender's Game, you can reach us at bookgeeksunc@gmail.com, on Twitter at bookgeeksunc, on Instagram at bookgeeksuncompromised.
Woohoo!
So everybody have a wonderful week. If you enjoyed the show, please do review us on iTunes. That helps us out a lot. And if you haven't read Ender's Game and you need a copy of it, there will be links on our review and on the show. So you can go to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, or Book Depository to get your copy.
And thank you again to our special guest. Anytime there's any book you want us to talk to you about, we are here. We're ready.
Nice.
And we have a whole list of books we can recommend to you. We can keep you busy for all of 2018.
Oh, I'm about to buy Sendlin' Sins. Nice. That episode you guys were talking about, I was listening to that for the second time on the way over here tonight. That sounds right up my alley.
Oh, it's amazing.
It's interesting.
Especially with you having a taste for classics, I think you will love it. Yeah. It's amazing.
I'm looking forward to it.
What did you say? Hotel California meets
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yeah.
That was the perfect, that you could not have made that any more tantalizing.
All right. I think that does it for us.
Yep. Everybody have a wonderful week. We'll see you next time.
Read good.